Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. He is helping clients this morning, but he will be back with us next week, which is something I'm looking forward to. Now, for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, and telling your friends, please continue to do so, and I thank you so much. The better we're able to get the word out, the more people we're able to help. So again, please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making your lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. We'll introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the area of health, security, and fun for you and your family. Now, with our experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, our topic today is the psychology of sports. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Lynch, has been a sports psychology consultant for the past 33 years to over 25 international and national championship teams at the professional and NCAA collegiate levels, and has been recognized as one of the top five in his profession nationwide. Dr. Lynch is the former sports psychologist for men's and women's basketball, lacrosse, and soccer teams at the universities of North Carolina, Duke, Maryland, California, and Stanford, and continues to work with several teams nationally. He has been involved with athletes at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado, and several of his clients have participated in various summer and winter Olympic games. Now, aside from sports, Dr. Lynch has also worked with performing artists and corporate executives. He is the author of 10 books that have been translated in as many as 10 languages on coaching, leadership, spirituality of sport, warrior spirit, peak performance, and sports psychology. He has 7 DVDs on The Way of Champion, as well as 2 6 CD audio boxes on performance in athletics. Dr. Lynch is the founder and director of Way of Champions, a performance consulting group geared toward helping others master the inner game for peak performance in athletics and develop the essential spiritual qualities necessary for the game of life. Dr. Lynch, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan. I'm really happy to be here with you today.
Well, it's great to have you on. I had a chance to read your latest book, and I love the fact that you're really talking to parents. You know, you're out there. You're talking to parents in regards to the things that they can do to help their kids. So I think before we get so much into the book, what led you into the field of sports psychology?
It's a great venue for teaching. I've been a sports nut all my life. From the age of 5 as I can remember, always been a gym rat, and I always understood that most of who I am and what I've learned about myself has come through the area of sports and athletics. So I continue to do that work, and I continue to be an athlete myself, and I continue to influence people by using sport as a classroom, so to speak, to teach the bigger lessons of life. So whether you win or lose on the basketball court, you're going to learn the lessons that you need to win or lose in life, depending upon how you learn those lessons. It's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy it, and athletes are tend to be upbeat and positive, and I enter and give them strategies, tools, and ways to enhance their performance.
Now, I think you touch on a great thing where you talk about the life lessons that we can learn through sports. And one of the things that I'm concerned about when I look at what has happened with a lot of schools where they're cutting programs, and for some reason they think that it's okay to cut the sports programs and to cut the arts or the theater programs. And those are the programs in which I think we learn so much about ourselves, but we also learn how to interact and work with other people as a team. Would you agree that is the case, and what do you see happening, you know, by these cuts?
Well, it's short-sightedness, and it's myopic thinking. I gave a talk recently in one of the University of California schools, and it was a keynote talk, and I emphasized that on campus, there's only one activity that teaches all their students about physical development, emotional development, mental development, and spiritual development. And that one activity is athletics. It does all four of those simultaneously. So that athletes that go through 4 years of college sports, by the time they graduate, they have been educated in those four pillars of knowledge, of wisdom. Now, having said that, people are short-sighted. They just don't get it. They don't understand the value of sport, not only for the athletes themselves, but for the community. Community involvement is so important. You know, we want to combine town and gown. And in order to do that, you have to have some kind of activities, and usually those activities are athletics. If not athletics, certainly in the art, the field of art and theater and acting, these are very crucial ways to bring the community into the university setting and vice versa. But my concern, basically, is I'm a teacher and a mentor and a guide and a coach. And what I want to do is I want to enable these young people, 18 to 22, when I'm working with the universities, I want to enable them, empower them, and inspire them to learn about life through sport. In 1 hour on a basketball court, you're going to learn more about yourself than you will within most students will learn in maybe a whole year. So we have to understand that not only is sport a learning opportunity, but it's a heck of a lot of fun, and it's another way to be physically fit and get our emotions out and deal with our life's journey. So, so many of these schools, they're not getting it. They don't understand. They're cutting back, and it's they'll realize this maybe in 5 years, but right now it's too bad they're doing it.
Well, I think one of the keys that you brought up is the word empowerment. I think that that's so important, and I think that that's something that we do get from sports and we do get from the arts. How much of this do you think is just financial restraints, and how much of this is actually a control issue? You know, we have political parties out there that are more concerned about controlling and starting to do it from a younger and younger age.
That's a good point, Alan. I think let's start with your first comment, the financial issue. In some cases, yes, finances do drive the bus. I also know that in some cases, in terms of Title IX, which for those of you listening, that's where federal funding is given to colleges and universities based on equal opportunity for men and women. So I find a lot of these universities are cutting back on their athletic programs, not just to save money, but to make it equal so that there are the same amount of women's teams or women have the same opportunity as men. Because if a school has a football team, that's 80 athletes that are on scholarship. And how do you make up for that in terms of giving women that many scholarships? Well, one way is to cut the men's tennis program, you know, and get rid of 15 athletes. Another, you know, maybe you want to cut the track and field team, and that's another 45, 50 athletes until you get it so that there's equal amount of men and women. But as far as the power is concerned and control, as you mentioned, I don't hear that too often in my travels. I'm not aware of that. I think it might be subtle, but I just don't have any way to respond to that.
Okay, and that's fine. And in saying that, it certainly wouldn't be something that would be too overt, because if it was too overt, people would figure it out. So,
absolutely.
Now, one of the things that I love in regards to your book is that you address parents, and again, mm-hmm. So for those out there, you know, again, we mentioned the fact that there are 10 books, but the latest book is "Let Them Play: The Power of Joy." The power and joy of mindful sports parenting. So, with youth sports becoming more competitive at such early ages, is there such a great desire to win that, you know, the parents are seeing these pro athletes that are making a lot of money, and it seems like they're sort of shoving them in earlier and earlier and making it more and more competitive at such an early age. How is that affecting the overall mental development, physical and mental development?
It's huge. It's totally huge. And let me just point something out. First of all, it's not the parents driving the youth sports. It's organizations who are trying to make money. So you take a soccer organization all over the nation, they have discovered that if we can get kids into soccer, we can make a lot of money. You have 6 and 7 year old kids where parents are paying $2,000 a year so these 6 and 7 year olds can be involved in competitive soccer. I mean, like at a high level, getting high level training and what have you. Now what happens is the parents find this out, and all you need is a couple of parents to buy into that, and then all the parents are going to buy into it, because as a parent, you don't want your child to fall behind, and it creates a fear reaction, and that fear reaction, parents start getting crazy and getting nuts, and before you know it, it's a nightmare. It's a total nightmare where parents don't know what to do. They're all anxious about their kid getting the next train to Stanford. You know, they've got to get a scholarship, and so there's pressure on the kids to win from the coaches, from the parents, and it gets crazy. And what's missed is the joy and the fun of sport. Right now, we have 33 million children, which equates to 66 million parents, assuming there's two parents in the picture. 33 million kids between the age of 6 and 16. And by the age of 13, 78% of those kids will drop out of sport. 78% of 33 million kids. So we're talking almost like 23 million kids, 24 million kids will never play sport again. And the reason is because they feel so much pressure from their parents, and they feel so much pressure from their coaches to win, to do it right, to get a scholarship. And what's lost is the joy and the fun and the whole purpose of sports to begin with.
Now, when you mention the thing about the joy, it reminds me that when one of my sons was starting in Little League, one of the speakers that we had for opening day was a former Major League Baseball player, Rex Hudler, who anybody, mm-hmm. if anybody had ever heard him, he was also an announcer. He was humorous, but he would also just get right to the point. And what he did when he spoke was he talked directly to the parents, and he said, look, he goes, this game is all about fun. It's about teamwork. It's about the joy of competing. And then he looked right, and this is as he's looking at the kids, and then he looked out at the parents that were sitting in the stands and said, do not ruin it with bad sportsmanship, criticism and undue stress. Let them have fun. And anyway, and I just thought it just really hit home.
Ah, beautiful. Yeah, and we need tons of people out there because there are so many parents who don't get it. Now, having said that, we have a lot of parents that might be listening to this show. And I need to point out, this is not about coming down on parents. In fact, Alan, from my experience working with parents nationwide, I find that maybe 90% of the parents really want what you and I are talking about for their kid. They get caught in a trap, and they don't know where to go. They don't know how to do it, and they don't know what to do next. And that's why I wrote this book, because I want to help those people, those parents out there, who really want to their intention is pure, and they want to do the right thing. So this book is definitely going to guide people in that direction from all of my years of experience working with parents. I know that this is the way to go. And I am a parent of four kids, and all of my kids were athletic. And I'm going to be totally honest here. My first child, I must have made 50,000 mistakes. No, seriously. And my second child, I cut that down to about 10,000. By the time I got to my fourth child, I only made 500 mistakes. Wowee, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But from those mistakes, I learned a ton. And I got excited about passing this on to other parents. Hey, you know what? You don't have to go through that. You don't have to feel anxious. You don't have to feel stressed. And you can help your children. One of the ways to help your children right now, even if you never read the book, after every event, go up to your child and just give them five words. Don't go debriefing the game and telling them that they should have stayed on third base and not taken their foot off the bag. And just tell them five words. I love watching you play. And watch their faces and the joy that they see coming from you, because that's really what they want. They just want you to be there, show up, and love watching them play. Put your cell phones and all your devices away and just enjoy the pure aspects of these youngsters playing sport and having a lot of fun and a lot of joy. Now, ironically, the more joy and the more fun they have, the higher their level of play will go.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah, they won't be tense. They won't be tight or tentative. They'll be more relaxed. And like you, Alan, and me, in my life, every time, the more relaxed I am, the better I perform. So parents want this. They want to know. They want these strategies. And the strategy I just gave them could help amazing amount of people to really get their kids back on track to loving the game.
Yeah. And I think also if parents will think about what it is that you're modeling for that child. If you're modeling criticism, if you're modeling these things where you're yelling from the stands or whatever, you're modeling to them that's how they should react. So now that they become that kid in the dugout that's also now criticizing other people. So, you know, the bottom line in anything is that you are modeling things for your children, and sometimes we're not aware of it. I know that one of my sons, when I was taking him for the next season for Little League, and he looked at me and he said, "Dad, I know that you really, 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 really like baseball, but I would rather play soccer." And I realized the fact that it was that difficult for him to say that meant that I must be projecting to him, you know, that I want him to do it so badly that he's doing it, but he's doing it for me, not for him. So I think so we need to communicate.
He doesn't want to let you down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He, like you say, he's doing it for you, not for himself.
Yep.
But I love your point is well taken. I believe it's brilliant, and that is the whole concept of what are we modeling when we act like crazy parents at a baseball game, yelling at the referee, or, you know, your child's up at bat and you're yelling, "Keep your arms up," or "Keep your elbow back," "Keep your elbow back," and the coach is yelling, look at the ball, look at the ball. And somebody else is screaming out some other thing, and they have all these things coming at them. I don't know how the heck they can perform with that kind of barrage. And modeling irritating behavior, being confrontational with coaches, being confrontational with referees, and what have you. Yeah, you're right. You're showing your children the way to not be cooperative, the way to not be a good human being. You know, to say nothing about a good baseball player.
Now, we have a question that's coming in. This one's coming in via email, and this one reads, what is your opinion about this shift to not keeping score in athletics for students in the public school system? I'm a school psychologist who is also a gym teacher. I'm told by the district office that competition and winning or losing hurts the feelings of those less physically talented. I believe it's dangerous to not reward those that work hard for something they desire and does not prepare young people for real life and future employment if they're led to believe that they deserve the same reward for showing up as someone who works hard to be the best they can be.
Oh, wow, what a question. This is... How long is this show?
We got plenty of time.
Oh boy, I could take 4 hours answering this question. Really, it's well thought out. It's obviously the person who's asking the question has experience with this situation. I don't know how well I'll answer it or how much I will answer. But let me start by saying this. You know, competition is getting a bad rap throughout the country, and it's not good. Competition, if we trace the word, the derivation of the word competition, its Latin root is competere. And competere simply means to seek together. And in this world, the way we improve is by coming together and offering each other the wonderful gift of my excellence. If I'm working with you, Alan, in a work situation, and you look over at me and you see me kicking up my game a few notches, that inspires you, and that motivates you to maybe learn something that you weren't going to learn if you didn't have that environment of competition. Our whole society has grown. All of our products have gotten better because it's a competitive world. Now, having said that, I wouldn't like to see scores eliminated. I think it's fun. I don't think the kids really care that much about the score, but I do think that scores might reward, in some cases, might reward people who have worked hard. But you know what? We need to be giving rewards and not trophies, but some kind of rewards for work ethics. And I think if we, a lot of college coaches now are at the end of the season are giving their kids rewards like the hardest working athlete on the team. So they get a work ethic award. And then I see coaches giving awards for, the best teammate. You know, the one you can rely on, the one who shows up for everybody. And so what it does is it inspires everyone to seek out ways in which we can contribute. And when we work hard, we do get rewarded. I think there's a big injustice that takes place when we send the message to kids that you don't have to work hard, but you're still going to get a trophy. And the way that shows up is in a lot of this youth soccer leagues, you'll find that at the end of the season, a team, they're not working hard, they don't care, and some kid's just out there chasing butterflies. Everyone gets a trophy, and I think in our world, that's not the way it is. That same kid who gets a trophy for doing nothing goes out into the world, his whole mentality is, I don't have to work hard to be rewarded. But in reality, when you go to work for a company, you're going to be rewarded on the work on your work ethic and how much work you put into it. So there's all of this that's going on in that question. The other element of that question is let me see, it just slipped my mind. let me think if I can recapture that.
Well, I think what you might be thinking is the other element being the person who has worked that hard to get to that point, and that there may not be anything really to show for it at that end.
Well,
does it bring them down to mediocrity? But I'm just saying is that, so I think part of that question that was weaved in there was, does that bring that person down to mediocrity at some point in time?
Well, if we value a strong work ethic, and if we value cooperation, and if we value learning all of these wonderful lessons for life, the reward is internal.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, external rewards don't last that long. I've been with 36 national championship teams, and to be honest with you, 3 weeks after the national championship, that's not what we remember. But 30 years after that national championship, what we remember is the work that we put in coming together as a team, working for each other, and all of the wonderful qualities and values and virtues that were learned, that we're using out there in the world right now as contributors and workers in society. So I think that what we do is, as a coach, I've got to set a culture up, and I build cultures. I help coaches to build the culture. And in that culture, you know, we learn that selflessness needs to be rewarded. We learn that giving to the team needs to be rewarded. Putting in the work needs to be rewarded. And those are the kind of things that really, really make a difference out there in the bigger picture. Now, he does mention something else in that question, Alan, and that is some kids are more talented physically than other kids. And, of course, they're going to, especially at the college level, they're going to play. The other kids might not even make the team. But there are other things in the world other than sports. And I don't think sports is the end all. I just think it's one way of doing it. I have a child, and I led the child into dancing, and some parents will lead the child into playing music, or art, or something else, something that they have passion for, and something that they love, and something that they can really feel good about themselves. And if all we're doing is teaching kids that, you know, if you work hard, you'll get a trophy, but you're not going to get it. And when you don't get it, you feel empty, because everyone's saying you got to win. You know, what is it? What's the expression in the Olympics? You don't win silver, you lose gold.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's a metaphor for how a lot of us are functioning, and embodied in that question is a lot of that kind of thinking, and so. We have to reevaluate our reward system. I think we need to keep competition. And by competition, it's not a word where I'm against you as much as I'm with you, so that I will inspire you on a run together because I'm feeling good today, and then that will allow you to reevaluate what you're doing and look at it, and the next time you'll take the lead and I'll follow you. And so it's a give and take. It's a constant evolution of greatness to seek our own greatness through the help of others, so our opponents become partners on this journey of success, not as a trophy, but success as a process. You know, how does it feel now? What is it like now? You're working hard now, and a coach can blow a whistle and stop play and say to the team, I love the work that you're giving here today. I love how hard you're working right now. Well, let's get back on it. And as opposed to, boy, that's a great basket that you just made, or I'm glad we won the game. We're a better team because of it, when indeed we might be a better team because we lost. You know, losing is our greatest teacher. And there's nothing wrong with losing. In fact, in many cases, we learn more about from our losses than we do our victories. And when I look at my life and my trajectory of my successes and what have you, it's all been because I've lost. I've had setbacks. The book that we're talking about here, Let Them Play. It's a wonderful, amazing book. I believe in it. However, that book was rejected for publication 10 times. Now, what's that all about? Well, I guess I needed to do more work on it. So I went back to my desk, and I did more work, and by the time after my 10-3 rejection, I had made all sufficient changes in that book to make it even better. Now I had an opportunity to publish it with three different publishing companies, and I learned from all of those rejections. There's nothing wrong with rejection. I think a lot of parents, and I point this out in the book, a lot of parents feel that if their child fails, that somehow they're a failure, that they're not doing the parenting, they're not doing a good job parenting, as opposed to being a good parent. When your child fails, ask them the question, what have you learned from this failure? Why are you better off today because you lost on Saturday? And get the child thinking that way. So competition helps us to motivate ourselves to get to a higher place, a place that we want to be. If we get rid of competition, then our whole system will have difficulty. We'll struggle. So anyway, great question. I can go on for hours with
Well,
that.
No, and, yeah. and again, and I love your answer. And again, and I thank this the school psychologist, the gym teacher that sent it in. We appreciate it. Now, for everybody out there listening, again, the name of the book is called Let Them Play. We are talking with Dr. Jerry Lynch, director of The Way of Champions. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest today, Dr. Jerry Lynch. And Jerry, we have another email question that has come in. This one reads, some of our youth sports can be very physically challenging. My sister's husband is determined that their son will play football. My sister feels it is not their son's desire, nor that he is physically able to undergo the rigors of the sport. She is shut down verbally by her husband whenever she attempts to discuss the topic. She wanted me to ask how you propose she handle this issue. And this is from Victoria. Thank you, Victoria.
Boy, there's some marriage communication issues here that,
that was my
we need to spend time on, huh?
Yes.
Well, first of all, parents need to do some work to get on the same page. I really highly recommend that if there are differences of opinions, that has to be worked out first before the child gets in the middle of things. As far as the football or whatever sport this child wants to play, I think the child has to determine that. And I think the parents need to sit down with the child and say, what do you want to do? Explore it with them. You know, like, what would you like to play? And what is it about this sport that you would like, that you like, that would make you feel good? And find out what the child wants. And the child might say, I don't want to play football. Mm-hmm. In fact, I might not want to play sports. But the child won't feel free if he has two parents who are arguing about what the child should do and shouldn't do. So the voice of the child is really important. You want to start to empower your child at a young age, because it's much more important that the child makes a decision on their own, much more important than if the child went and played a sport and excelled at it and got a scholarship to college. Because what we're doing is we're teaching a child critical thinking. Mm-hmm. And what an opportunity for a child to learn how to think on their own rather than, my father wants me to play football. And I can tell you, I don't know how many athletes over the last 25 years, I mean, it's in the hundreds, I don't know where it is, how many athletes, when I say to them, so, Sandra, tell me, why are you playing lacrosse? Sometimes I ask a question like that, I see tears right away, like they've been holding back all of this pressure and all of this these feelings, these emotional feelings. And what comes out is, because my father played lacrosse, and he loves lacrosse, and he thought I'd be good at it, and I am good at it, but I don't like it anymore, but I don't want to let him down. And people are playing sports for the wrong reason. A lot of kids are in sport, and they feel it, and that's why we have that figure, 33 million kids in sport, with 78% of them dropping out, 27 million or something like that dropping out. So these parents who are trying to manage their child, give the game back to the child. Let the child determine their fate. Now, as far as being heard is concerned, under the age of 14 or so, I don't know how old this child is. Does it say, Alan, how old the child is?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, so I'm going to assume, based on the question, it sounds to me like maybe the child is under the age of 14. The historically, there's not much that could happen to a child that young in terms of damage from football. I'm saying this because I think that is a major concern. And if I had a kid in high school, and certainly in college, I'm always concerned about head injuries and trauma and what else goes along with that. But at an early age, the kids aren't big enough. They don't hit hard enough to produce any kind of major injury. That said, I can't predict what would happen. I mean, I'm just, from my experience, I noticed that very rarely does a 12-year-old get really that seriously hurt that they can't recover from it real quickly. I mean, it's not the case. But what you do is you give the child a chance to decide their fate. And, you know, Dad, if the child says, I want to play tennis, you got to bite the bullet and smile and nod and go along with it and support your son, say your child, and say, you know what, I love watching you play. And my job as a parent was always to take the lead from my children. I have one son who's now a college basketball coach who played high school basketball, college, and everything. And when he was a sophomore in high school, and he was really, really good. And he came down to breakfast one morning. He said, I quit. I'm not playing basketball anymore. My gut, what I wanted to say to him was, Sean, are you kidding me? You're too good. You're the starting point guard. You're great. You can get a scholarship. Don't worry. You stay with it. And that would have been me forcing him to play a game he didn't want to play. Instead, I said to him, Sean, I'll support you no matter what you want to do. I'm just curious why you don't want to play basketball anymore. And the second thing is, I want to ask you to take a week to think about this a little more clearly. And if you feel the same way in a week, by God, you can go ahead and do it. And that's my job as a parent. That's exactly how to be a good sports parent. So we have to learn those things. Because if I forced him, first of all, it would have backfired. He went on to be an amazing basketball athlete. He won a state championship in high school, starting point guard, all of that stuff, on his own. And had I forced him to play, I'll bet you he would have quit. Mm-hmm. And so for that father, you want the best for your child, your son. You want your son to be happy first. You want them to make their own decisions, which will give them the chance to develop critical thinking, which is a very important skill, especially when they get to in college and beyond, because that'll help them make decisions. Like when they're confronted with drugs, they can say no to drugs because they're strong inside. They know how to critically think. So these are the kind of things that you want to develop. And give your son mom and dad, ask your son, what do you want to do? If you want to play football, mom, get on board with it, support it, go to the games, tell them, I love watching you play, and that's the end of it. And let them decide, you know? And chances are the child will pick the right thing, and the child will have more fun and develop all these other qualities.
Yeah, and one of the things that I love about what you just said was, on the one hand, you didn't try to force him to keep doing it, but on the other hand, you used your adult brain that said, maybe this is a knee-jerk reaction to something that I can't see right now or that he doesn't understand right now, and you just asked him to take some time that allowed him, as you said, to have some critical thinking.
I
love it.
Isn't that what you and I want to do in our life? We want to, you know, I'm at a crossroads with certain things. I want to take a week or a month. I want to give it some thought. I said to my wife, Jan, I said, you know what, I can't decide right now. My intuition says don't do it, but I want to take a week and think about it a little more and get some more information and find out, you know?
Well, we have another listener question coming in, so I think that we've certainly hit a nerve, because I love these questions, and again, I thank you, all of you that have taken the time to send these in either prior to the show or during the show. This one reads, I have been a high school basketball coach for a number of years. I am very excited about your book and hope it will give me pointers on how to deal with overzealous parents who spend entirely too much time advising me on how to coach their kids. Does your book go into coaches and parent relations?
Yes, it does. And what another great question. I'm very in awe of the people writing into you, Alan, and the level of depth with their questions. For sure, I address this. I address it first from an angle of, if I'm a parent, how do I talk with a coach? And then I talk to the coaches, and I talk about how coaches should handle this situation. Now, when you're reading through the book, you'll get an idea. You'll pick up so many pointers and so many strategies on how to relate to those parents. It'll help you understand why the parent is being the way they're being. It's not because they're evil, it's because they just don't know better, that's all. And so reading this book will be like you being me standing at the ballpark or on the basketball court as the coach, and you'll have ways to respond to the way the parent's being. So even at the college level, I have college coaches reading this book, because guess what? Even at the college level, can you believe this? Even at the college level, we have overzealous parents coming up to the campus, talking with the coach, wondering why their kid's not getting more playing time. And, you know, this book will helps my college coaches understand where that parent's coming from and how to respond to that parent. And once you understand where they're coming from, you'll have an idea about how to attack their concerns and their questions. So it's an educational process, which is, that book is educating parents to help their children understand what it takes to have more fun in sport. It's also a book that helps parents understand where coaches are coming from and how to let the coach coach. You know?
Yep.
How good is that? And then, on a third level, when a coach reads this book, the coach becomes the sports psychologist without the training. No problem. All of a sudden, you're there, and you're reflecting what that parent's saying, and you're giving them some insight as to what their behavior is really doing and how they can change that. And everyone will be happy. And it's just a matter of us coming to terms and understanding all of our intentions are pure.
Well, you know,
the parent thinks that they're helping their child by going up and talking to the coach, which couldn't be any further from the truth. The child thinks that the parent is getting in the way when the parent doesn't want to get in the way. So there's a miscommunication there. And then there's the miscommunication between the parent not understanding the coach's job, which this book points out real clearly, and getting in the way of the coach. And then there's the coach who loses the patience and gets totally upset with the parents and fails to communicate, creating a battle between parent and child and parent and coach and what have you. So if we're all on the same page and we understand that our intentions are pure, we're just not going about it in the right way, even though your intention is there. Now I can say, okay, I know what you want for your child. I know you expect the best for your child. But as his or her coach, here's what I'm going to do. You know, they're going to have to do this, this, and this. And if they do that, then they're going to get more playing time, or they're going to get to enjoy the game a lot more. So we need to communicate, and this book is a great mechanism, which for me, I am a coach. I've been a coach for 40 years. I'm a psychologist. I'm a parent. So I'm all of it, and I'm an athlete. So I've been in every aspect of the game of sport. It's almost like if I owned a restaurant, I was the cook, I was a waiter, I was the hostess, I was everything, right? And so this book really pulls it together, and it's really written for the entire sports network of coaching, parenting, and athletics too, as well.
Yeah, so. And I want to add one more thing to that, because as I was reading it, one of the feelings that I got was this is also something to have the young athlete themselves read. So share a little bit, and we've only got about 2 minutes left, a little bit about how the young athletes themselves can deal with stress using some of the mindfulness techniques that you talk about.
Well, that's it. You just hit it in a nutshell, Alan. There are mindfulness techniques in there. Okay, so guess what? Anything that's in that book, and there is plenty of it, that has to do with being mindful as an athlete, not only as a parent or a coach. If you're an athlete, there are strategies and tools in this book that as an athlete, you're going to be exposed to the same tools that I use even up at the professional level. I have consultancies with professional sports in the NBA and NFL and other professional teams. And even at that level, they work just as well at that level as if a child is 7 or 8 years old. It's wonderful because now the kid is having fun because the parents are backing off and just letting them play, the title of the book. Now they're having more fun, and now not only that, but they're increasing their fun factor because now they're learning how to deal with failure, and they're learning strategies and techniques on how to be more mindful and how to visualize certain things in a game, and which will help them be better athletes. And one last thought here, Alan, is this book, the foreword is written by Steve Kerr, who is the head coach of the Golden State Warriors right out there in California. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a wonderful, very sensitive foreword. And in that foreword, he says, you know, this is what we do with our athletes. We just let them play. We put them out there. We coach them. We tell them what they can do and what they can't do. And we put them out on the court, and essentially they just play, and we let them play. And so he's a big proponent of the work that I'm doing. We have a consultancy, he and I, and we go back and forth with a lot of this stuff. This book will give you all of that. It's a wonderful combination of all the work that I'm doing put into one source. So I think you'll find it really enjoyable and extremely practical for sure.
Well, I have found it enjoyable. And again, for those out there, the book is called Let Them Play, The Power and Joy of Mindful Sports Parenting. Dr. Lynch, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it very much. Now, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what is the best way to reach you? I assume in regards to buying the book, you can get it anywhere. You can get it at Amazon or any major bookstore.
Absolutely. You can get the book anywhere. Yeah. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of more free information from me if they go to my website, which is wayofchampions.com.
Got it.
One word, wayofchampions.com. And there are videos that you can have your kids watch or you can watch them. There's about 15 videos on there. There's articles that I've written. There's a lot of free information. Plus, you can always get in touch with me through that website. And if you have questions or you have concerns, and want to set up some time to meet, you know, we can do that. So it's all there, all my information, and good luck. Yeah.
All right. Well, again, thank you. And for anybody out there, if you're driving, you're unable to write that down, all the information will be on our website, the answersforthefamily.com site. Again, thank you so much, Dr. Lynch.
You're very welcome.
All right.
I really enjoyed it.
All right. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar to tune in next Monday when we will discuss the game changer in non-invasive cancer treatment. We're going to talk about using light and acid to kill cancer cells from the inside out. And if you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of The Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day journey to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And the next time you're on Facebook, Twitter, or any social media outlet, please remember to stop by our page and check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, look forward to you listening to us again next week on Answers for the Family. Be good humans now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polachek, only on LA Talk Radio.